The Bhagavad Gita was not told by Krishna to Arjuna. You say Bhagavad Gita was not told by Krishna to Arjuna, then why do you have this picture? Here is Krishna and here is Arjuna giving the message of the Bhagavad Gita. And then in the first chapter, Arjuna says, you know, he is confused. Vishad Yoga, he says, Shishyasteham, Mam Shadi Tvam Prapannam, I am your student and please teach me because I am surrendered to you. And then at the end of the 18th chapter, he says, Nashto Moha Smritir Labdha Tvat Prasadan Maya Chuta Karishye Vachanam Tava. He says, I am ready to do what you told me. My delusion has been removed by your grace. And I'm standing here without doubt. So throughout the Gita, we hear Arjuna asking questions and Krishna answering. So why do we say that the Gita was not told to Arjuna, was told because the Gita was told to me? Each and every one of us, when we read the Bhagavad Gita, we have to say that I am the student and this message that is given by the teacher, by the Lord himself, is meant for me. Every word in this, every phrase, every verse, every chapter is addressed to me, who is the ignorant one. I am Arjuna. I am the one who has all the doubts. I am the one who has all the questions. Even though the questions don't come to me, but Arjuna is such a bright student and so astute that at the right moment, he asks the right questions so that the flow of knowledge through this beautiful text is very smooth and continuous. And so there is a logical exposition of thoughts throughout this Bhagavad Gita from chapter 1 to 18. Chapter 1 starting with Arjuna's doubt and 18th with the final. So the 12th chapter, which we are doing right now, called the Bhakti Yoga or the Yoga of Devotion, talks about devotion or love for the Lord. And as we have studied before, Arjuna asked, is God form or formless? God, do you have a particular form or are you formless? And who is a better devotee? One who worships you with the form or who worships you with the formless? And Krishna, in the first several verses, talks about the qualities of the formless Brahman, the all-pervading consciousness that is unmanifest, that is cannot be thought of, cannot be contemplated upon, cannot be seen, but is the support of this whole universe. And of course, the form we all know. We worship God in different forms as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha, as Jesus, as Guru Nanak. So all these forms that we worship, Krishna says that it is good. You need to have a form to love, to worship, because it is easier to associate with the form than with the formless. But do not limit God only to that form. In he says, Mayyeva man adhatsva, may buddhim niveshaya, nivasishyasi mayyeva ata urdvam na samshaya. There is no doubt. When you see the form, he says, place your mind on me. Turn towards me with total love and develop a relationship with that particular form of the Lord, the relationship of love. But then he says, penetrate that form. My buddhim niveshaya, fix your intellect in me. When he means in me, what he says, the Lord is not only in the form, but go beyond that form to that substratum, the support. And so in that form of the Lord that you worship or love, you see the totality, you see the entire universe, that the entire universe is an expression of the Lord. And the Lord is beyond the universe. Even the universe only occupies a small part of this totality that we call as Brahman. So God is not only form and formless, but he's beyond both. Because form and formless are concepts of the intellect. So when I say visualize a form of God and you close your eyes and you can visualize your favorite form of the Lord. But then when you say he's all pervading, he's the supporter of this entire universe, he's there in every part of the world, He's unmanifest. He's the creator, sustainer, destroyer. Then you develop certain concepts. But even those concepts cannot describe that reality. Even the Upanishads say that, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. The speech cannot describe that concept. Mind cannot think about it. But the scriptures point to the direction in which when you turn your attention, and for that it is very important to have a quiet and a peaceful mind. When you have a quiet mind, when you sit for meditation or sit for prayer with a quiet mind, then in that quiet mind, you see that reality. So when the mind is quiet, that reality which is there everywhere becomes manifest. But what is the obstacle? It is vasanas. It is our negative tendencies, our selfish desires. So today's verse two verses will tell us how to reduce these vasanas and quieten the mind so that you may reach that reality. Verse number 11 in chapter 12. अथैतदप्यशक्तोऽसि कर्तुं मद्योगमाश्रितः सर्वकर्मफलत्यागम् ततः कुरु यतात्मवान्. So atha etad, in this way api ashaktosi, even in this way ashakto, if you are not capable or if you are not able to kartum, do what? Turn your mind towards me. Because in the verse 8, 9 and 10, what Sri Krishna had done has shown us four paths for all kinds of seekers. So it is not only one path or one role or one direction. So in the verse 8, 9 and 10, there were three different paths that were given for us. He says, for the highest quality of seeker, who has minimum of vasanas, 20% only vasanas, 80% of his mind is pure, he has a little layer of impurity, little layer of ignorance. And that is the advanced seekers. I don't think you and I are there, but maybe we can try to go there. So those are the people who are very advanced, who are meditators, who are, you know, sitting in the monasteries and who are the teachers and all that. And they are very close to the truth. So for them, he says, mayeva man adhatsva mai buddhim niveshaya nivasishyasi mayeva ata urdhvamna samshaya. So put your mind on me, fix your intellect totally in me, and then you shall live in me constantly. Such a person is never away from the Lord. He becomes one with the Lord. He merges. That's why he says, you live in me. But then there are people who have, Gurudev in his commentary says that, you know, the first group has only 20% impurities. Then there are others who have 40% impurities. 60% of their mind is pure. So he says, for those, what you do is, abhyasa yogena tataha mam ichchaptum dhananjaya. Again and again, your mind, which is supposed to be centered on the Lord and thinking about the Lord at all times, wanders into the world, into the objects, into the selfish desires. So bring it back through the yoga of practice, abhyasa yoga, through the yoga of practice. Bring it again and again back to me, the form that you love, and constantly when you live in that those thoughts, then slowly your mind will become purified by remembering the Lord, chanting the Lord's name, and then you'll become one. So it's a progression. Then a third person says, I cannot meditate. I'm a worker. I like to work. I like to go out into the world and work. And once in a while, I might be thinking about you, Lord, but I cannot think constantly. He says, okay, then take me to work with you. In the 10th verse, he says, abhyasepya samarthosi मत्कर्म परमो भव मदर्थमपि कर्माणि कुर्वन् सिद्धिम अवाप्स्यसि. हाउ शैल यू रीच सिद्धि द हाइएस्ट गोल बाय टेकिंग मी टू वर्क. Bring me with you to your work and do all your activities dedicated to me. Mat karma paramo bhava and madartham api, and do all activities for me. But he says, I can't even do that. And this is a person who is materialistic, who is just a worker, who works 80% impurities he has. Only 20% of his vasanas have been destroyed, his negativities. He's 80% of his mind impure, in the sense not that he's corrupt or dishonest, but he's materialistic. His mind only can think about the world. So for such a person, he says, dedicate all your actions to me. And that's what he says in verse number 11, what we just chanted. Atha etad api ashaktosi. Even if you cannot take me to work, even if you cannot dedicate your actions to me, if you cannot remember me while you're working, then he says, mat yogam ashritaha. Take refuge in my yoga, in your actions towards me. How? Sarva karma phala tyagam. Sarva karma, all activities. Phala means the fruit or the result. Tyagaha, give it up. Tata kuru yatatmavan. That is how you should work. Yatatmavan, self-controlled. So this verse has two or three different ideas which we shall try to cover. One of the concepts that is often very unclear is giving up the fruit of action. Because we take fruit as the result. So if I go to work, I get a salary, that is the fruit, that is the result. So Krishna says, sarva karma phala tyagam. So give up all the fruits. That means what? I should go to work without expecting a salary. I should live a poor life, and then when I die, then Krishna in heaven somewhere will give me the result, will give me the money. That's not what the Gita says. The fruit of an action does not come before an action. The fruit does not come during an action. It always comes after an action. Like if I plant a seed, you know, the tree will grow, the fruit will come a few years later. If I start a company, I start a business, you know, it might take a few years of hard work, and then eventually the company will hopefully do well and I can then get a profit. A student is studying for the exams and takes the test. Now, whether she passed or she failed, she'll find out a month later, and then depending on that, the kind of college she will go to and all. So when they say give up the fruit, it does not mean that when I'm doing an activity, I do not have the goal in mind. People also think it, what it means is you don't need to have a goal, you don't need to have a purpose. But every activity we are doing it for a purpose. I go to work for a purpose, I clean my house for a purpose, I go to play tennis, whatever I do it with a particular purpose. I go to the gym so that I may be healthy. So you mean I should not have that idea? What we say is that the fruit of action is always in the future. It could be tomorrow, it could be next week, next month, next year, 10 years from now. The action I am performing in the present, and the result will come sometime in the future. But while I am doing my action, if my mind is thinking about the result, thinking about the fruit, thinking about what I will get, then my action will not be suitable, will not be very good. Like to give an example, there are two salesmen who are making a presentation, and there is a $6 million contract there are two rival companies. And so they are competing. And so each one of them is supposed to make a good presentation, and based on the presentation, they will get the contract. Their company will. So both of them at the night before are preparing for the presentation. But one is thinking, you know, if I get this contract, you know, $6 million, my commission is 10%. So I'll get $60,000. And that from the $60,000, I can go on a vacation, can make a down payment on my house. And not only that, but I'll get a promotion. I'll do so well. I'll be made vice president of the company. But if I don't get the contract, you know, then I might even lose my job. I'll lose the commission. And so not only while he's preparing, but while he's making the presentation, his mind is already focused on what will happen if he gets the contract or if he doesn't get the contract. He's all the time thinking about that. The other salesman says, look, my job is to make the best presentation at this time. He also knows that he's going to get 10% commission. But at the moment when he's preparing and when he's presenting, he says, my job at this moment is to make a good presentation. He's not worried about the result, whether he will succeed or fail, whether he will get a job or not get a job or a promotion. He has no thoughts. His focus is that I should do the, which one do you think will make a better presentation? Obviously the second one, because his mind at the moment is focused in the present on doing a good job. And the result will take care of itself. He knows that if I do a good job in the presentation, the results are guaranteed, because they say that what you deserve, you will get. Even the Lord cannot prevent you, because the law of karma is so powerful that he has himself set up, that you will not get anything more or less than what you deserve. So the depending on the effort, the results are guaranteed. They may not happen instantly, but in the long run, every result gets its actions, gets its results. So when I am doing my activity, or a student taking an exam, you know, if she's thinking, you know, if I pass the exam, I'll, you know, go to a good medical school. If I flunk, then, you know, so then at that moment, her performance in the examination will not be good. So that's what they say, that if you're attention is on the result, your attention will be so diffused that you will not do a good job. You will do a third-rate job. And if you do a third-rate job in your action, then obviously the result will be third-rate. So what they are saying is that while you're doing the action, focus on the action. Your attention should be on what I am supposed to do. Do your best. And then leave the rest. And then the result of the action is not in my hand. The result of the action depends on so many factors. It depends on, like for that salesman, how did the other salesman do? What is the product? What is the listener's thoughts? What are the circumstances? So there are many other factors in the result. But if I have done a good job, then I am happy, I am satisfied. So that is one part of karma yoga, that when I am doing the action, my result should be not my thought, but my thought should be on the action. There are two other factors in karma yoga, in how I should work. And Bhagwan Raman Maharishi, who was a great saint of South India in the past century, he said it very beautiful in his Upadesh Sar, where he gives the essence of the four yogas, karma, bhakti, gyan, and the hatha yoga. That means the path of knowledge, the path of action, the path of devotion, and the path of yoga or even meditation. So in the path of karma yoga, he says, Ishvara arpitam nechaya kritam chitta shodakam mukti sadakam. He says your activities should be Ishvara arpitam, dedicated to the Lord. Na ichchaya kritam, nechaya kritam. Na ichchaya means not without selfishness. So they should be unselfish. So activities that are dedicated to the Lord and unselfish. So that is the second aspect of karma yoga. That's why he says, kartum mad yogam ashritaha. So do your activities dedicated towards me. Taking refuge in me, in my yoga. Yoga means joined with me. And once you do your activities which are unselfish, which are dedicated to the Lord, which is no matter whatever position I am placed in, oh Lord, if I am a teacher or an engineer or a doctor or a housewife or a student, wherever I am in at this moment in my life, you know, I do the activities to the best of my ability. I do them dedicated to the Lord. Why should I do that? What is the benefit of that? They say, Chitta Shodakam Mukti Sadakam. They purify your mind. Purify your mind, that means they, when I'm doing activities unselfishly without worrying about what am I going to get, then slowly, slowly my selfish vasanas are reduced. Once, then automatically my anger is less, my greed is less, my jealousy is less, because, you know, they are not for me, they are for society, they are dedicated to the Lord. Then I do not worry about the result. I am not focused on what am I going to get out of it, am I going to be this, am I going to be that. I am doing my best, O Lord, because they are activities dedicated to you. Whatever activity I am doing as my service. When I'm seeing my patients, or when I'm teaching my students in a class, or even when I am cleaning my house, oh Lord, you reside in this house, so I'm cleaning this house for you. Then even the sweeping of the house or the vacuuming is no longer a chore, because I am serving the Lord. Every activity, when it is done, then it says it purifies the mind. The more you remember the Lord, the less are your vasanas, the purer is your mind. And mukti sadakam, and that is how you liberate yourself. What do we mean by liberation? What we mean is our mind at this moment is focused on objects, emotions, thoughts, what I can have, how many people love me, and my ideas, my concepts. So we are all the time focused, and we are fighting with the world to get more of this, more of that. My idea should preserve. But as your vasanas reduce, as your mind becomes purer, your mind turns closer to the Lord, who is already there in my heart as life. But that life or consciousness manifests, becomes apparent. And that's why when we contact these saints or these Swamijis who come, when you sit in their presence and listen to them speak, you feel that you are standing in front of the Lord himself. I have a very beautiful story about this person working unselfishly. There was this old man, very old, in his 80s, you know, barely able to walk, you know, and he would walk with a walking stick, getting weaker. And so one day he was digging a hole. He was sitting on the ground and digging a hole. And he dug and dug. It took him a long time, but finally he made a deep hole. And then he put a seed in that, a mango seed, and he was covering it with his shovel. And so his great-grandson, who's about 10 or 12 years old, comes and says, "Oh, Grandpa, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm planting a mango tree." So he says, "When will this mango tree?" He was wanted to make fun. You know how teenagers, they make fun of the old people sometimes. He said, "When will this mango tree come out?" He said, "Oh, in about 10, 12 years." He started laughing. "Grandpa, you're such a fool." He says, "Why?" He says, "By the time this tree comes out, you're already so old. By the time this tree comes out, you'll be gone. So you won't even be able to taste a single of the mangoes. Why are you doing it? Why are you wasting your time? You already are so weak. And you're spending 1 hour in planting the tree." He said, "Son, you're right. But you see that mango tree that is here, next one, which has hundreds of mangoes, and every day you and I enjoy the sweet fruits?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "My father planted that just before he died. 25 years ago, just before he died, he had planted that mango tree. And if he had not done that, you and I would not be enjoying the fruit." So the idea is that not every activity has to be done for me or myself or my family. And one has to be very conscious that the world has given me so much, nature has given me so much, the Lord has given me so much. It is my duty to give back. So when I serve somebody, or when I help somebody, or when I do something for somebody, I'm not doing them a favor, I'm not helping them, but I am helping myself. Because it is my good fortune that I have this ability to help financially, if I can help, or physically, if I can help, or with love I can help, or I can share my time with somebody who is sick, I go visit them, or I can share my knowledge. So by doing that, O Lord, I am so thankful to you that you have given me this ability, or this knowledge, or this wealth, or this situation where I can help somebody. So through that service, I am purifying my mind. I'm getting closer to the Lord. And I am reducing my debt because society has given me so much. The sunlight, the water, the air, especially in this country. You know, we have so much. So we are constantly accumulating, getting. So by giving a little bit back, I am reducing my debt to society. So when I'm serving somebody, I should not have the arrogance that I am doing this favor to this person or I am helping this person. Oh Lord, I am fulfilling my debt to you and I'm thankful. So gratitude should be very important. So what that does is that it reduces your arrogance. Because the moment you are helping or serving or doing something, you get a little taste of arrogance, a little. So through service, you purify your mind. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse that he says, Sarva karma phala tyagam tata kuru yatatmavan, and do that with a self-control. Yatatmavan means self-control. So have your mind focused on me, or even if you cannot do that, just dedicate all actions to me, and at the end, the result you dedicate to me. Oh Lord, it is because of you. If I'm successful, Lord, it is your grace, your blessings. If I did not succeed, if I did not do well, then maybe there was something in my effort. I didn't do a good enough job. Maybe I didn't deserve it. Next time, I'll do better. So when you do that, then your actions are all purifying. Have any comments? Yes. So we are born with certain tendencies, with certain habits, certain tendencies, certain vasanas. And in this life, we have an ability to either reduce them or add to them. So I have certain negative tendencies. I have certain, say, in my bank, say I have, say, 50,000 karmas that I've accumulated in my previous life. Now, they could be a mixture of good and bad. But say the net result of all that is that I have 50,000 good karmas. Maybe I have 60,000 good and 10,000 bad, but the net result is. Now in this life, I can either add to those good karmas or I can subtract by doing negative karmas. So the free will comes that in this life, I have this free will and I have this knowledge by reading the Gita, Bible and all the scriptures of what I should or should not do. So when I do good actions in this lifetime, then I accumulate the good karmas. And then as I do more good karmas, it reduces my negative vasanas. But if I become a crook or a cheat or a liar or I hurt people, then I'm reducing my good karmas and I'm accumulating negative karmas by hurting people. So then obviously I get more vasanas and then I suffer the consequences of those actions. But if I do good karmas, then obviously my old vasanas will slowly be exhausted because the vasanas can only grow when they are fed with more of that. But if I don't do that, then slowly my mind becomes purified. So when I said he does not, what I'm saying is that whatever good or bad actions you do, you will get the good or bad results. There is no one can change it and no one will because it is I who did it. But we have the free will, and so that's what I meant. But there is definitely a free will. Everybody, you know, they have this word sanchit karma and prarabdha and agami. Sanchit means what I have accumulated in my past life. And prarabdha, those karmas that I have in this life that will bear fruit. You know, because a certain karma bears fruit at a certain time. Like I put my hand in the fire, it bears fruit right away, but if I plant a tree, it bears fruit in 10 years. So certain karmas manifest right away, but in this life itself. But certain of those do not, then those become part of my future karmas, the agami. So that's what. So yeah, there is freedom of choice. Absolutely. Yes. So you can become 80-20, 80 bad and 20 good, or you can become 80 good and 20 bad. The choice is yours. Yeah, we'll talk a little more about it in the next verse, but definitely, yeah, we have the choice and we have the freedom. And that is the difference between humans and animals, because we have free will. An animal, you know, is conditioned by his or, you know, his nature to do that. So they don't have a free will, or they don't have free choice, but we do. And by reading the scriptures and applying them in our life, we can change our destiny. In fact, that is the purpose of these scriptures, is to change our life, to change our destiny. Otherwise, if you're just read and go home and then don't apply that, then it's no benefit.